Being 7 o'clock on January 9th, we will call to order this meeting of the Village of River Forest Sustainability Commission. I will now take the roll. Chairperson Simon.
Here.
Commissioner Charette. Commissioner Drury. Commissioner Haley. Commissioner Lennon.
Here.
Commissioner Mazzatesta.
Here.
Commissioner Veazey. Student Commissioner Steerwalt. We have four voting members present in person. We do have a quorum. I will also note Commissioner Drury is attending virtually. First item of business is public comment, which we have none. So we'll get over to our next item of business. Katie Neary from LRS has been generous enough to come out and give us some of her time this evening. So she is also on the Zoom. I will ask the commissioners who are here in person to speak directly into the microphone just so everyone who's on the Zoom can hear you clearly. Katie, the floor is yours.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited to be here. Thank goodness for Zoom. How cool we can meet on a winter tundra night like tonight. So thank you for having me. The last time I came out was a couple years ago. And so I probably don't know most of you. I'll just do a quick introduction. Obviously, you know, I'm Katie Neary. I am a municipal manager with LRS. I'm pretty much the lead liaison between River Forest and LRS. My primary objective is to work with our team to ensure the obligations are met with excellent customer service. I do have a right hand, I'll call her. Her name is Jordan. Seth talks to her just about every service day. and then she's my municipal coordinator. And then also Mike Dykstra, who's our operations supervisor. So both of them work with some of the staff members on a day, you know, for day-to-day needs. And then just so you are aware of my position, so I report to actually the original owner of LRS, who currently sits on the board of directors. And I also have another report to, who's just a great support, and he is our executive vice president of mergers and acquisitions. So we do that just because a lot of the capital investment for dealing with municipalities often align with what we're doing out there with our acquisitions. So I'm thrilled to connect with you. Hope to answer all your questions. And by the way, you had great questions. Thank you so much for putting them together. After I looked at this, I thought I better like just make this all questions and answers. So I pretty much did that. I gave you it's an opportunity at the end to ask questions. I just don't want to take your whole meeting up answering your questions. But so as an introduction, did that compost stats. I'm going to show you a quick snapshot because I think that's interesting. And then it's just going to be Q&A for the most part because we don't have a lot of time to go into a bunch of stuff. So just real quick, I wanted to show you this. So in January of 2021, we were at 342 homes composting. May of 2022, we were up to 418. January of 23, we were at 490. And then in December of 2023, you'll see we're now at 523. So, you know, out of the 2,884 homes, 523 are enrolled for compost. So that's nearly 20%. So that's 55% more homes participating than when we started in 2021, really kind of keeping a closer eye on composting and doing a little bit more promoting, it seemed to me. So the catalyst, if you're wondering, back in early 2022, we worked with Sarah and Jeff, I think pretty much Sarah at the time, to do a campaign. So that started in early 2022, and we pretty much used the village media. So LRS, we did create a video, by the way. It's a YouTube video, and that is on our webpage. I know that they did do some promoting with it as well. We did mail out an initial mailer when we introduced the HHW curb program, or at the home collection program, I should say, and the e-waste and the compost together. And we do feel, just generally from having done this for, you know, 30 years, the municipal media is hands down always the most effective. So I've got Q&A here. Here we go. So I'm going to just jump right in. So what is LRS's future thinking in terms of increasing recyclables and composting? Well, LRS is a recycling company. It's totally our past, our present, and our future. We are very well known, especially in this Chicago market, because this is our hub where we began, as an industry leader when it comes to recycling. Our entire infrastructure is built around recycling. So the majority of our facilities where we bring the materials are built to receive, I'm going to hide this actually, are built to receive, sort, and bale the materials. So we're fully intending on continuing to be one of the most, one of the top domestic recyclers. And note, I said domestic because most of our partners are right here in the Midwest. We do not and have never shipped overseas, at least less than like 0.001 of our materials. So we're very proud of that. And the reason is, and we still to this day provide what I would consider to be the highest quality of commodities from the recyclables we collect from the businesses and residents that we serve. So I this is four pages, by the way, just this one. And I just put this one in the front because it was kind of a loaded question for me anyway. So, but we do work with, we support very practical legislation by engagement with our local and state representatives, our partner communities like River Forest, and our customers, obviously. You know, we, you know, even myself, I've been involved with a number of really great opportunities. A few years ago, the material management study that was initiated by the IEPA, and it eventually became legislation. You know, I've worked with the Illinois County Solid Waste Management Association as well. And, you know, they've, as a subject matter expert, I've given them some documentation that they have, and they work with us too. So we work together. We even work with the other haulers as well. You may have heard of this extended producer responsibility. Hands down, it's already significantly reduced the weight and the volume of materials. So it's definitely having a positive sort of a domino impact. With less materials needed to create the materials, then there's obviously less fuel used to recycle or dispose. And so it's promoting what we would consider also a circular economy. And we are very much on the forefront of that and believe very much in that. So we are also an active member of many impactful organizations, such as the NWRA, or the National Waste and Recycling Association, Solid Waste Association of North America. In fact, our regional, our Chicago area vice president, he is the president of the local SWANA chapter, the Illinois Recycling Coalition, the Illinois Food Scrap Coalition. I mean, actually, it goes on. And it's, you know, the cool thing about Lakeshore and just partnering with Lakeshore is we're not siloed. We're just all plugged in and communicating. And really, I mean, anyone in the counties will tell you, Lakeshore, who's the most active participants, and just, you know, exactly what you're asking, like, you know, increasing recyclables and composting and sustainability. It's Lakeshore. And I think we've proven that, and we've even been investigated as the city of Chicago to show that. So I am bragging because I'm really proud of that. And it's something that it wasn't easy to come by, being, you know, at the forefront when you're the small guy starting out. So we also spend a ton of money on equipment. You know, we're often the guinea pig, and we're asked to be the guinea pig, you know, ever since, you know, one of the big wins we had was the city of Chicago. So we do their recycling program now. And so we're asked often, you know, by manufacturers, hey, can we test this out? So we're always constantly being confronted asked to, you know, use some materials, see, you know, or use some of their equipment and see what it's like. And so obviously we want to produce the best commodities. We want to make sure that they're clean recyclables and something that's very, desired by our partners. So again, I think this is the last page I have on this, but so we're still going to continue improving our current infrastructure to build to the needs. We continue to acquire facilities and companies that offer potential to increase our recycling and compost capacity and capabilities. That's a really big factor, actually, when we're out looking to acquire new companies. We're not only going to look strategically from a location standpoint, but we're going to look at, okay, what kind of potential exists there? So that's something there. I don't know if any of you have heard of the talk pertaining to carbon-containing materials being used to create jet fuel. That is something that's showing up in the Chicago market soon. It's been proposed, and there's been a lot of research in it. If that comes to fruition, that would mean, for example, anything containing carbon would be used to be reused into this fuel process. So if that happens, it's going to take years for that to happen. Number one, there's already a ton of pushback on that. So not everyone's going to be on board. So we still have, at least we know now, there's no change there. So we're going to continue doing what we're doing and just increasing our capabilities and our capacity. So we're always considering options to reduce fuel emissions. One of the ways we're doing that is actually barging waste. There was something in my whole life and career. I've worked on the landfill side. I've worked in hazardous waste and all kinds of different, sort of fields in this lines of business. And barging was always out. It was like, no, the waste is going to freeze. You can't do well. We've worked really hard and worked with some partners. And that is something that we might be doing in the future. And believe it or not, it is significant in terms of fuel emissions. Just what it takes, the number of trucks it takes off the road is significant. So if that comes to fruition soon, I'll let you know. It's really exciting. It is kind of in this area. So I'll definitely let Seth know, and he can bring it to you. So we also recently opened our new exchange facility in the stockyards. It's a massive, massive, I think it's on like 25 acres, and it's a massive state-of-the-art material recovery facility. So the primary objective, we were awarded the City of Chicago contract. Obviously, we had to have somewhere to take all of that material. We did have enough capacity, but it just totally opened some doors for us, and it helped to increase diversion. It helps us to generate premium recyclables and divert about 224 million pounds per year away from landfills. I do have a video. I put this in here. If we have time, I can show it to you. I'll come back to that at the end. It's a 3-minute video. And what's neat about it is you can actually see the inner workings of the MRF, as we call it in our industry. Last one, I lied. So composting, I wanted to address that. So if you're not aware, we were actually the first company in the nation with an industrial capacity aerobic digester for food scraps. It was South Korean technology. It was amazing. It created, I mean, I say was because like it's past tense. It's just under construction right now. It needs some tweaking to be cost effective. Little things like stickers on the fruit and vegetables get in there. And it just jammed it up. We were constantly having to fix it. And we literally had people from South Korea, from the company we bought it from here, fixing it. It just became very expensive. So we took it down, and we're just working with our compost facilities right now. But we are definitely have our eye on that, because that was it. We actually had major fertilizer companies that took some of our samples, and we're thrilled with the soil amendment. So we're still looking at that, just so you know. And then, of course, we continue to build our network of resources to include permitted facilities that accept more materials. So composting is one of those things I try to be careful with, because compost facility can be shut down tomorrow. You don't have to have a lot of permitting. You don't have to go through a lot. to have a compost facility or a recycle facility. You do for other pollution control facilities. But so, you know, just adding in new materials because they can be composted. Like I had dryer lint come up today, believe it or not. And dryer lint is great for composting in your backyard. But a composter who's also making materials that have to be tested and meet certain criteria, they don't want to have everybody's dryer lint with nylon and all kinds of other chemical constituents in their blend. So I'm just mentioning that because I'm always asked just about every day about some new material. Can we do this? And I love it. But generally, it's pretty strict and we're careful about introducing anything new. Our post-collections team is outrageously working to identify more materials that can be recycled, especially recycled compost. That's coming along, I feel, you know, not rapid enough compared to some other states, but I think finally we're seeing that progress in Illinois, which is exciting. As far as, you know, recyclables go, that also changes. You have to have buyers and you have to have the equipment to recycle. So finally, moving on from that, what are some further recycling opportunities for the village? I love this, that you're even thinking this way, because there's a lot of materials we can't collect at the curb. Some of those would be the fire extinguishers. I mean, actually in our program, the HHW program, we do accept a couple of these, but smoke alarms, that's a big one. Car seats, propane tanks, styrofoam, textiles, household batteries. So that is a company that has partnered with DuPage County, Lake County, and Kane County Flat Can Recycling. I've recently made an introduction with Seth, and I think hopefully you guys will hear from Kat, who's the owner of Flat Can, soon. I just love what she does. I've seen her grow, her company grow and develop, and she was really recycling, and that says a lot. So there are charges to some of that, but it's very minimal. So she would come out and like do an event. And I was thinking, because I know River Forest used to do events until we introduced the home collection program. So if you wanted to do another event, obviously you'd have to have some volunteers and all of that and coordinate that. But there's also eWorks, which is one of my favorite partners that we work with. And they're into textiles now, and he will almost take them for free. So and there are other programs that, you know, they do offer it, like at the curb. I haven't heard too many good things about it. Like I listen for that because service is important. So I'm not even going to mention them, but there is a company that's out there where you can get a bag. It's orange colored and they will let you put your old shoes and your, you know, jeans and whatever in there, and then you know, pillowcases, and then come and pick it up. But what I've heard is they actually just don't ever show up. So just be cautious if you're checking into that. And then Scarce, of course. I don't know if you've heard of Scarce. I looked in Cook County, and I know there's some resources out there. I think Scarce is probably one of the most Scarce has everything there. So it's not that far from River Forest, and they do have a lot of resources. So you could always maybe just advertise that, or, you know, see what options are available through Scarce. And then there's also, and those are actually all nonprofit, but there's also Call to Recycle. I did look and see what's in your area. Most of it is just right in Chicago. It's like within 10 miles, where you can bring your rechargeable batteries, your single use, primary, you know, non hazardous batteries, your e-bike batteries, your cell phones, your high energy batteries. Now, obviously, we offer all of that in the HHW program. So, or the e-waste, we take the cell phones. It's kind of weird. So, but that's just something that someone could check into and do anytime. You go on that website, plug in your zip code, and it tells you, oh, there's a Lowe's that takes cell phones by your house. It's really cool if you haven't seen it. So moving on, are there any updates on the types of materials accepted in the recycling program? Yes, there's paper cups now, so that's kind of cool if you're a Starbucks fan or Dunkin' Donuts or whatever your coffee shop is. So that is something we partnered with the Food Packaging Institute. And again, this was another one that approached us and said, hey, you know, we want to try this out. So we do recycle paper cups now. So we'll continuously, you know, we are always working for this. Obviously, it's our bread and butter recycling. So we're always looking for some way to capture more materials. We do have a resource. I put it on here. I'm not going to open it up, but it's at lrsrecycles.com and it's Recycling 101. So, and I'm going to go into this some more in a minute, so I'm not going to touch on it now, but so are there any programs or services in neighboring villages with similar programs that have seen successes or failures? Can we share about the learnings and observations? So, you know, Oak Park obviously has a compost program. I will tell you, I just ran the numbers, and by percentage, River Forest is actually has more by way of percentage in terms of, you know, compared to how many homes you have more homes composting. So I'm speaking specifically on composting here, but they do run continuous campaigns. What I've noticed about Oak Park, and I do oversee Oak Park as well, is they just have this gradual growth. It's, you know, we had one big hoorah, so to speak, and that was in 2022. They ran a campaign similar to what River Forest did. And ever since, and I know they just do continuous education on it. So they have, of course, their communications department. They manage the education and the outreach. It's consistent. They regularly post about the composting on their webpage or social media. They have their own YouTube video that they did, their e-newsletter. And I believe, having been in this a long time, that the e-newsletters are probably the most read, more than anything nowadays. Like, I know, I don't know about you, but when I like to read things online, I don't usually even books. So the bi-monthly mailer they send out, that's also helpful. They definitely do a lot of promotion at their tabling events like Farmers Market, Oktoberfest, Green Block Parties, all those things they do. I did confirm with them they've never used like outside marketing resources. They just do it in-house, which I think is pretty effective. So that program has seen a lot of steady growth. So what can LRS and the village do in terms of providing more signage and education for what can be recycled and composted? So we have the stickers on the carts. You might already know that. Like, has the what's compostable, what's recyclable, what's not recyclable. We're actually revamping our entire webpage right now. And in that process, there's a ton of new graphics and cool infographics and things like that we're going to have. So when we release those, I'm definitely, you know, I can certainly share those. And as this presentation goes on, I'll get to where I think that the village might be able to use them. So again, using your own media and communications and just engaging with the community is huge. You do want to be a little cautious in engaging with the community. I deal with hundreds of thousands of residents every day. I mean, I don't personally talk to them, but I usually, when things are very, very escalated for whatever reason, I end up with those calls. And also just being at the forefront of media as a growing company, we're always looking at, you know, what are people saying in the media? Excuse me. I just had like a really runny nose. And so we know that, you know, soliciting for too much information sometimes is not the way you want to go, but just putting things out there, engaging the community with like things that you can do, yes or no, or, you know, put something, you know, just getting them to communicate, and it becomes a hub for people to go to. So that's one thing I would recommend. And, you know, whatever you're comfortable with promoting. I'll tell you what, I really like the EPA website. I know I shouldn't be surprised about that, but the EPA actually has, not the Illinois, although they have greatly, greatly improved their webpage. So that's another one you can look at. But I would say, I mean, if I were in the media side of River Forest and I was looking to engage and, you know, from an environmental sustainability side, I would be looking at this website. There's a great ton of information, ton, just so many resources. So this is a little bit repetitive, but what outreach efforts is LRS undertaking and what can the village do to assist? I coupled this question with it, sort of similar. What can we do as a community to improve upon with regards to recycling and composting? Again, it's finding the right resources, putting them out there consistently, because somebody that may, you know, you think you put it out there 1 month, it's like doing a survey. You know, surveys, well, they're not always the best because it just depends on your audience and you're not doing it enough to really capture, you know, the essence, so to speak, of what the community is after. So you have to be consistent. And, you know, just moving down to my bottom sentence there, you know, identify the topics for each month to educate on. I can give you suggestions. I actually do this with a couple other communities. And then obviously promote the programs that are available. You'd be amazed. Some people, you think, oh, everybody knows that River Forest has a compost program. Maybe not, you know. And then also the resources. And another thing, it's a bit aggressive. I don't know how much time you all have. I'm sure you're all volunteering. But is to reach out to the schools and the community businesses, you know, Lions clubs, the library, see how they can help promote. Because a lot of times it's just like a free opportunity where you can post something, put something up, use their media, because they also want to promote. Also, you know, you'd be surprised. I mean, I've had the Women League of Voters reach out to me for, you know, what I'm doing with right now, actually. So how can River Forest increase composting participation rates? So I want to say one thing before I jump into this, but I mean, I would love for everybody to compost in River Forest. That would be my dream. You know, it's also good to promote composting in your own yard. That is actually the best thing you can do, because then you're reducing the overall environmental impact. However, you know, obviously, like I said, from a selfish LRS side, we'll take it all. And that will show, you'll be able to measure it, you know, that way. And that's what's difficult, is just measuring your success, I guess. But, you know, again, back to the media, back to your whatever opportunity you have to post things, you know, continuously share the benefits of composting. That's what people need to see. Like, you know, the little did you know, and you don't want to be, you know, too drawn out, just a little did you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's what I've learned. Composting is, it's one of the best ways a person can reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, if you're not aware. And then again, this is the benefits of composting from the EPA that I just showed you. So methane is a potent greenhouse gas. I mean, this could be like a did you know right here example. When food waste decomposes with oxygen, it does not release methane. So taking food waste out of the landfill reduces those emissions, and it's better for the air. So just little things like that. If I sound repetitive, I'm sorry. I'm going to try to, I'm almost done. I'm halfway through. Are there opportunities for communications campaigns? So in a nutshell, yes. What we do have in the contract, it's actually for a brochure to be printed every year that to mail out, excuse me, to the residents to just go over the program that exists. But what we could do instead, in my opinion, like most people that live in River Forest know, and if it's a new resident moving in, you probably have brochures at the village hall, actually. And we probably have some we could always mail out, but they can be printed and downloaded. So, and most people know the program for the most part, the basics of trash and recycling. But what we could do is we can create like a giant postcard mailer. Those are the easiest if you have to open things, sometimes people right away won't even look at it. It's like too much to read. I don't have time. So I would recommend if you want to use the resource you have free with us this year, we could do a really cool postcard. And then we can line it up how, whatever works for you. We can line it up with Earth Month, which is April, or we can even do it before then. I just want to make sure we're ready because anytime we do campaigns, we have to have the carts. So I want to make sure we have all those. So that I'll talk with Seth about if we determine to go that route. What are some simple ways for individual residents to start being more sustainable in their waste disposal practices? So, you know, you always hear the 3 R's, the 4 R's. Honestly, I've even seen nine. I've seen 9 R's now. But so the R is the thing, but I just stuck with the 7. And I've even seen them be different words, but rethink, refuse, that's not refuse. rethink, refuse, and assess is what I've seen. Refuse and assess, which you're doing. Reduce, reuse, repair, regift, recycle. And then I've always seen rot. I don't like that word either. But so pretty much, you know, participate in the compost and recycling programs. That's the obvious. Most people are doing that. Reducing the waste is really, it's waste minimization. I mean, the average American produces like 4.3 pounds per day of waste. In Illinois, it's actually 8. And I think that's because there's probably a lot of people living in a house that might not be documented. So depending on where it's at, you know, but I know a friend of mine did an experiment, and for 30 days, she cut way back and got it down to like almost 5 pounds for the whole month. So that just proved to me you can absolutely do it if you think about it, what you don't need. So rethinking, donate, refuse new stuff, reuse, and compost in your own backyard. So what are ways that the village can start marketing its successes in terms of waste diversion? So I love this, like, because this is going to be part of your, hopefully your community engagement. That's what I would recommend anyway, is first determine your goals. Like, I mean, obviously your goal increase in, you know, recycling and, but kind of let's give that a number, you know, because even as I was looking at your monthly report, we don't have a ton of statistics in there. I have some that are a lot more complicated, but I can add some factors in there. I was thinking just to give you some, because there was this stat in here somebody asked about and I don't have it. So I have to actually get that number, but promote the goals and the stats that are shared, especially when there's progress. Happiness attracts people. So, you know, if it's positive, put it out there. Collect stories and testimonials. Again, the media, like, hey, tell us your story and we'll share it. You know, you do want to obviously have some control on the media. But it's so simple. And that's just advertising, like how simple composting is, you know. Conduct monthly collaboration, promotion of waste diversion methods with, again, it's kind of repetitive, schools, businesses, and the community. So what are the top five things? Thank you for asking this. Whoever asked this question, thank you. what are the top five things people do wrong in terms of recyclable items not being recycled? Tough to answer because River Forest rocks with recycling. And non-recyclable items containing the recycling, contaminating the recycling. So if it's soft and you, if it's soft plastic and you can smash it, trash it. That's kind of the new thing I'm hearing. So no soft plastic in the recycle cart. This is hands down the biggest thing. This would be your plastic bags from the grocery store, which we would recommend you take them back to the store or reuse them somehow. And, you know, your candy wrappers, your bread wrappers, your potato chip bags, people put compost bags in the recycling. Right? Because you think, oh, well, it's recyclable. No, it's not. Not for our equipment. It just really damages our equipment. Film, I've seen so many diapers. No clothing or textiles in the recycling cart. That's obvious. I mean, we don't take clothing there. And if you, and I, that's why I want to show you the video so you can understand why. No plastic tubes or hoses or tinglers in the recycle cart. So like a wire hanger it's maybe made of, you know, metal, and people will think, oh, well, it's recyclable, or my screwdriver is recyclable, but that just all jams up our equipment. So we need to find different things to do, different resources for those. And then food waste, people inevitably think food is like, you know, recycling, compost are the same thing. Even my own neighbor thought that, and I could not, she was from Oak Park, but I was like, I don't live out there now. So, but anyway, so you have to, and you can't talk people out of it. You have to really explain. No, I mean, so it just helps if they can see it. So, and another great question. Thank you for this one. The holes or gaps exist. What are they in the current collection program? I may have to, whoever asked this question, ask you to expound on that a little bit to make sure I capture what you're asking specifically. But the consistent education from the village's end would be absolutely wonderful. We love that. I have a few communities that I work with that have excellent communications. And it makes a huge difference, like the HHW programs coming up. I mean, we send out the postcards, but, you know, when you have those collections, people miss it. And then we end up having to go back, which is very costly, especially for the HHW. But the program itself runs really smooth. No complaints on contamination. The largest pain point, and Seth can probably speak to this now that he's been there a little bit. It's really, you know, so your program is extremely unique in that we pick up the garbage from the back of the home and some of the homes, and then we'll pick up the recycling is supposed to be at the front of the house, and the yard waste is supposed to be in the parkway. And it's really kind of all over. And this is something we address with Jeff. And the thing is that if we have a driver that's been there for 30 years, he knows everybody out there. He knows where they put everything. But if that driver gets sick or retires, which we did have happen, then we have a new driver. And suddenly he doesn't understand that it's, you know, in the backyard, in the shed, you got to go get the key. And then, you know, it is kind of that way sometimes. So there's a lot of locked gates. It's something we run into, broken latches. And they're like, well, you can reach around and grab it. So those are just some of the pain points. It's in dogs, you know, some of our drivers are like, oh no, I'm not, even though it's a golden retriever, I'm not going in there. Cars blocking the driveway is another big thing. So I put this example in there that I just got, I think Monday. I blocked out the plates so you can't see, but if you think about it, if there was an entertainment center, like on the side of that car, you know, or we're walking an entertainment center from the back to the front, or even a cart, if we damage that car or fall over, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of liabilities with going to the back of the house to pick up materials. We're doing it, and that's fine. I mean, there's, you know, River Forest has long had this program, and I think we're doing a lot better than when we first started and we lost a driver who retired. And so I think we're like the statistics I saw looked not too bad considering, but oftentimes it'll be Seth will call and say, okay, this resident said that their waste material was missed today. And then we have these cameras on the trucks. So we look it up and sure enough, you know, there was a car and it was just not safe enough for the driver. Initiatives LRS is doing to help keep costs down. I will kind of run through this quickly, but this is an unending list. Like I didn't want to take too much time on this, but here's some of the things we're doing: route efficiencies. We're always looking at our routes. How can we make them better? River Forest is pretty cut and dry, kind of a city structure. So we don't have a lot we can redo there. Investing in better equipment to process the materials. That's huge. Truck styles, like the old truck style that you had servicing River Forest, we found out was actually very inefficient. When we could run a front load truck with the Corrado with the bucket in the front where we could dump it and keep the driver safer and in the truck. So, and then safety is number one. So to that point, a lot of people don't realize how dangerous picking up garbage is. It's actually the seventh most dangerous job in America. It's an improvement. It used to be five for a long time. It was the fifth. So it just goes to show, like, our newer equipment, now a lot of communities throughout the country are catching on, and the new technology that we use with the cameras on the truck. I mean, that all of that helps the drivers. And then the safety, you know, there's certain ways you can go down a street, certain ways you cannot back up. I mean, in city environments, very difficult, believe it or not, to pick up garbage. But we can see now as an industry that the best practices and standard operating procedures that have improved are having a drastic impact with just this, you know, landing at number seven versus five, cameras on the trucks. And then the recycle and compost stickers, you know, educating help a lot. How does River Forest do your rates? And that's what I couldn't come up with, like an actual rate. But what I look at is, well, right now, and this isn't the best method of measurement, which is why I need a formula, but is your weight. So I looked at your total weight for 2023 with your HHW, your e-waste, because these are all being recycled, your compost and your recycling, and you're basically like right there with your trash, which is impeccable. In fact, the recycling was like in almost 900 tons, I believe. And I want to say your waste, it was at 2,000 or some just over 2,000 tons for the year. And realistically, that's like almost half. I mean, it's pretty unheard of. Most communities are like 30%. So you're hovering around 50, which is excellent. So just for that, and recyclables, you know, they weigh a lot less. The methods of measurement we've been using all these years just won't work going forward. So keep that in mind when you're looking at things. Measuring participation rates, that's good. Measuring weight, it's not a good solid number anymore. So that's that. And I think I shared with you, so we already went through compost. So you're rocking. We're going to hope to keep rolling and do what we can there. So what do we do to stay updated on the latest advancements in waste disposal and recycling? So we're totally at the forefront when it comes to advancing. We're highly sought after by major manufacturers and industry players. We're in 8 states now. We were the first to have artificial intelligence, the first to ever have an aerobic digester. And, you know, we try these things out. Obviously, we look at, you know, what the risk might cost and determine if it's viable or not. We have excellent partnerships. I mean, we have people that come to us and ask us, can we help you do something in this area? And so it's really exciting to be part of Lakeshore for that reason, I can tell you. We've implemented a new phone and customer email system. It is super sophisticated. It's so cool. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, but it helps so much. And we can see, you know, we can see a lot better, you know, what customers are calling about. Provides a callback option too, so you don't have to sit on hold. We're doing a whole new revamp for our online tools and resources. I'm excited to share that with you. Although most people in River Forest still contact the village, I've noticed. We do use our third eye camera system. We're exploring more sophisticated tools there. And then we have rolled out our first electric truck. That's tricky. It sounds great, but garbage trucks and electric, there's a lot to it. So we're working on that. So questions?
Hey, Katie, it's Eric. Thanks so much for putting this together. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I think we probably have some questions, so we'll kind of go around the room, so to speak, here. I just kind of have one here. One of the headwinds we have on communicating recycling is a lot of media that's out there that talks about how recycling is bullshit. And like nothing, everything goes into the landfill, nothing's really diverted. And I hear that from a lot of neighbors who are just kind of like, why would I go through the effort when nothing's really happening anyways? First of all, do we have data and maybe assets that can help us communicate that better as well as understand it better ourselves so we can.
You know, I love that you brought this up, Eric, because I hear it too all the time. People are, I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, we are recycling. But then again, you know, we're a recycling company. So, you know, and I do know some of our competitors, I mean, I do know they're absolutely not recycling. They're taking it straight to the landfill or basically a transfer station. So I guess from that aspect, I was, and it's not everybody. I mean, you know, the best thing to do, because I've seen, I've even watched just recently, I was watching something about that, you know, what's actually happening to the recyclables, you know? So, and maybe we put something together specifically, I mean, it is very promotional to LRS. That's not my intention, but just to give people comfort and say, hey, you know, you can check out this video. We can do a little, whatever we need to do, or a, like an informational sheet about Lakeshore. Because we've, you know, we started off as a recycling company, but we're also, like I said, everything is built around that. And I went into all that, but you know, just all of our partners, everybody that's taking the material. I mean, you know that the companies from China have actually moved to the United States, and they're in the Midwest. And a lot of that is the Chicago materials. I mean, there's a reason why they're, you know, moving closer, and it's because transportation is less, and it's because, you know, I mean, I believe it's Lakeshore, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, we can put something together either. I mean, an informational, it's not going to matter. You're going to have to do like a quick video. And I don't, you know, I mean, it wouldn't need to be very professional. I know that your mayor is going to be particular about that. So, but maybe, you know, that would be the route to go to explain, yes, it's being recycled. Here's where it's going, and maybe show it. So that's something I would even take on at a larger scale to show everybody, not just River Forest. So I am going to jot that one down, Eric, and see if there's more we can do there. I don't know if that helps.
Oh, that does. And I can kind of work with you offline to see what we can do in our.
Great.
I had a question. So in your response to how River Forest is doing, you focused on like recycling and composting, but the bottom line is that we want to reduce landfill waste. You know, what I find, in the compost bins is really we're picking up a lot of yard waste, which, you know, hopefully once people have a composter, they are recycling food scraps too, which is what we're really getting at. But those metrics can be affected by things which are not really reducing landfill waste. So focusing on that aspect of it, do you have statistics on landfill waste per capita in River Forest, or is that something that you can provide to, you know, to us in the future? And I guess the follow-up question to that is, if you do, if there are other municipalities which you partner with, which are successful in reducing landfill waste, because, you know, you, as I said, you focused on these other two components. Could you share with us what they're doing? Like, for example, I was visiting a friend in Wheaton, which also uses LRS, and I noticed that they had different size landfill bins, and that often people would get, you know, people who are very successful at reducing waste will get a very small landfill, and then we'll have, you know, maybe a large recycling, and the fee structure is encouraging that. And so I'm wondering, are there other innovative things people are doing to specifically reduce landfill waste and not only, you know, expand what it, you know, effectively ends up being like yard waste?
Yeah, great questions. To answer your first question, yes, I will work on that and just show like what you are per capita. Like when I mentioned the weight per home, that's a great idea. And that could be a statistic. So I'm going to try to build some formulas in there so Seth can give them to you at these meetings. And I love that you asked that. Thank you. And then in terms of Wheaton, they're super unique. That was another program we did, another innovative. We have the RFID program out there. I don't know that we're going to continue doing that. So a lot of communities have three different size carts. So my suggestion would be get a large cart and only put it out when you need to. But in the summer, that's not always reasonable. But you know, if you keep it in your garage, you know, a lot of people don't want to have it in there for more than a week. But if you can, and it's like outdoors somewhere, that would be the most environmentally, you know, wise thing to do, because you're not, it's one less stop, you know, for the driver.
Yeah, is that something we could build into the fee structure, that there could be an option to have biweekly pickup? Because what I'm getting at is providing a financial incentive and also a financial reward for people who are successful. And that could also promote composting, because, you know, that could give people the savings, which would then cover composting, which would then enable them to, you know, if you don't have smelly things in your trash, you can put it out once a month if you're composting. So I'm just wondering, are there changes in the fee structure that we can work in to reward those people who are, you know, really making a concerted effort to reduce their waste?
It's difficult with anything biweekly if we're still sending the trucks out there, because the bulk of the cost is not disposal. I mean, it accounts for like 30% of our cost. But then you do have labor time is a little less. So, I mean, if it was very structured, and we definitely had that going into it, I mean, if we can't measure it and we don't know the participation there, or if you said, look, all of River Forest from now on, everybody's getting every other week pickup or something, you know, that would be something we can work with. I don't know how viable that is, but, I do know, you know, in terms of compost, and I just wanted to, when you mentioned compost, you meant like more just food scraps. Like you're seeing just yard waste in there more than you are food scraps.
I think some people do it exclusively for yard waste.
Okay.
And then hopefully once they have it, then, you know, at least they have the incentive, but.
And it's maybe just educating them on it. Like, I mean, it's so easy. Here's a bucket for your home. Like maybe that's something else that we look at, you know, doing. I mean, I guess I would have to really think about that in terms of restructuring your program, for incentivization. That was a tough word to say. Incentivizing. Let's keep that at the forefront and, let me jot that down, like just some ideas. It's tough. You have such a unique structure. I mean, that doesn't really matter, but it's costly to provide service there because it's time consuming. And there are liabilities there that we don't face in other communities. Just like I said, going back to, go get the, I mean, there's cost incentives more on that side of things, honestly. But we could consider, I mean, like you said, I mean, a biweekly, having somebody opt in for biweekly today that might not be doing it in 6 months, that's not something that we can really budget for. We still have to have a truck and a union driver that are not, they're, you know, paid very well. So that's where it gets a little difficult there, but we can certainly definitely keep that in mind and talk with Seth about it as we go forward.
I have a question with regard to what's recyclable. Is the program or the list of what can be recycling the same for single family homes as well as the multifamily facilities that you service?
Yes.
This because I'm in a condo, and if we're going to advertise and talk, I'm wondering if we have to make some kind of distinction between talking to our residents through an article in the paper or a did you know or, you know, whatever kind of marketing and educational material.
So thank you for asking that. Yes, I mean, it should be exactly the same because they're going to the same place. If it's Lakeshore, I would say. Yeah. Now, sometimes what I will see, because at multifamily, you know, just like it's a very common ongoing for decades and decades problem where those contain, if you put a dumpster out there, a lot of people do not care. They don't pay attention to, or, you know, they send their teenager out to go put something in the and I'm not saying all teenagers don't pay attention, but a lot of them don't, or kids, you know, go throw that away, go take the garbage out, go put the recycling, you know, and they'll end up putting garbage bags right into the recycling. And so it's completely contaminated by the time the waste provider shows up. And then we end up spending money on sending the garbage guy back to go pick it up. And so it gets very expensive there, but not what you asked. So just to answer your question, it should absolutely be the same. But if it is not, and it's, you know, it's a multifamily that's provided a service that's provided by whoever, and they might have a dumpster there just for cardboard, because as with, you know, everyone, we're all getting more deliveries now at home. And so cardboard is a lot more prevalent than it ever was. So they may, that's something I'm noticing recently, is more of the cardboard dumpsters. So otherwise, if it's commingled, it's commingled, just like you have at your, at the curb or alley in your case.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Gary Lennon. Thanks for all you shared with us tonight. I may have misheard you, but I thought I heard you say that participation rates and weights are no longer the best measure. Right, then what are?
Yeah, and what I meant by that was, okay, so if in participation, and I'm just, you know, I guess I'll call myself a bit of a realist here in that, I mean, I would, like I said, like everybody to be in the compost program, but it's better to compost in your own backyard. So it's hard to measure who, you know, what they're generating, you know? So from a side where you're measuring it as a community and you want to show, hey, our community, cause I know it does matter. And there's things that sometimes revolve around that. And so from that aspect, participation, you do want to measure it. And if you're looking to, you know, show it in the numbers, then the only way that I know of is, you know, you could ask people, are you composting in your backyard? Are you measuring what you're composting? I mean, you'd have to have that to understand participation. Participation in our program, I can measure that, you know, no problem. And then what was your other question? I'm sorry, I got a little distracted.
I thought you said weights as well.
You know, and so the reason why is I've always been asked, you know, we measure recycling weight, and people are like, well, the more weight you have, the more you must be recycling. Well, that is, you know, logical to an extent, but in the last 5 years, the EPR, you know, the extended producer responsibility has forced, you know, the industry to use lighter weight plastics. I mean, you know, if you get a water bottle now, you can kind of smash it. Whereas before it might've been really thick and you couldn't have done that. You know, your packaging that Amazon comes in, it's really thin, where it used to be a huge box, or, you know, so the weight and the volume, the capacity is less. So, you know, I mean, it's better for the environment. So it's just difficult to measure by weight. Now, you can definitely measure garbage, like the gal that was before you had asked for. I think that's a great statistic we'll put together. And you can measure the per capita kind of garbage. So from that aspect, it is something we can measure.
Can I ask you a question about the EPR? Because I know that those have passed in other states, but I thought they were at a total standstill in Illinois.
It could be. I'm not an EPR professional. I don't.
There was a bill that was introduced, but I think even if the fact that it's other states are accepting it, you know, like Amazon is national, so it's forcing them to change. But, you know, just specifically in Illinois. Yeah.
Thank you for asking. I mean, we are definitely seeing we're seeing the results of that on our side. So that's why I say, like, I looked at your recycling totals last year, and it's already, I mean, it's very similar. And what I should say it this way. It actually looks like it's a little bit less, but I know that, you know, in the last year, some of the things that are going into the recycling, there's every, you know, manufacturers are being forced at a, like, I guess I would say like a federal level, even though it's probably inaccurate the way I'm saying it, but it's from a federal level that this is taking place. So even if, you know, we tossed out the paint, there was a, you know, the paint bill. Well, it actually was just reintroduced. I think that that's coming. There's legislation coming for that. So, you know, and those aren't things I'm always on the forefront of, but I'm kind of, you know, catch wind. And if it impacts us directly, then
The EPR isn't national, but there are about 10 states that have adopted it. So, you know, Amazon's not going to produce different boxes for different states. So that's a sense that it has a federal impact. But
yes.
There are about 10 states that have adopted.
Yes, thank you. Well said. Any other questions?
Out of respect for time and Katie's evening, which we have taken, is there any, like, one more question from anybody? All right. Katie, you've been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll follow up with you offline on kind of
some
of these ways. But we really appreciate your time in putting together this deck for us. And so you guys know Seth does have a copy of this deck that he'll be sending out to all of us. So.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thanks so
right.
much. It was good too. I didn't
Sorry
get to
for
see
taking
you,
your
but
evening, Katie.
No, no, it was good. It was fun. I like it. All right. All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Eric, kind of in summary, it sounds like when you talk about all the different things that we can do, and to Susan's point, we can measure the weight of garbage. That's a valid measure. And no matter what you do, if that goes down, that's a real good thing. And maybe that would be
the age-old problem is how to – when you – because, right, this is one of our objectives, our greenhouse gas. There was good info in there. I think we do need to follow up with her, like, actively, just to make sure, because I think she – I took some notes.
Took a few notes. I specifically noted, and I was unaware of the provision in the contract. Take advantage of, and then as we – our weekly and monthly communications, find more – promote the various programs and provide information.
Our website and make sure the links that she provides are not really applicable or
I was thinking on the mailer, maybe we can put like a calendar on the backside saying, hey, we're going to do, you know, Christmas tree, you know, recycling on this date, or, you know, fabric material is on, you know, this month. Have like a calendar of all the annual events due in the village.
Yeah, and I do, I believe, have the dates for next year for the e-waste and household hazard. Occur during just the annual LA Lights program, the Christmas.
All right, we'll definitely circle back to this next meeting or in a future meeting so that we're making sure we're not, I just don't want to be in a situation where we have speakers come out, they talk, and then we don't do anything about it. He actually did give us some levers, not a lot of levers, but a few levers.
But I think that she also confirmed a lot of what we're doing right, too. A lot of that, it's like, yeah, we're doing that. So, isn't
it? Actually going the right way.
But we have to market that to the residents.
Yeah. That's always been our, like, always been our challenge, right? Do a lot of things. You want to move on to the adoption of the
catch the minutes in the packet. I didn't know if anybody had any edits. Susan, I had mentioned this to Jill because of the various Open Meetings Act stuff. guys voting on this. I do know you guys are attending.
Because I sent out that email earlier, and I had forgotten all this. So that's good to know for all of us. So, like, we can zoom in, but then we're not allowed.
Yes, yeah, because it has to be a disaster declaration, a medical or family emergency, or you are traveling for village business or your work.
And in those cases, you are eligible to vote.
There needs to be a quorum present in person and allow you to.
I think the Open Meetings Act needs to get in the real world of modern technology.
But it's a good thing we have Seth, our general counsel, here to walk us through it.
When I worked at the state, I had actually proposed changes to the Open Meetings Act. They went nowhere.
Thank you.
And then the just other piece to be clear, too, is you heard it at the beginning of the meeting, is when you are speaking, Zoom, your camera has to be. So good to know. Is there a motion to wait a second?
Chairperson Simon?
Yes.
Haley? Lennon?
Yes.
Mazzatesta?
Yes.
Easy.
Yes.
Right. Minutes are adopted.
Just for EV charging?
Yes. So I included this memorandum that I put together pulling the electric vehicle charging data. I did not have a time to put together a draft amendment. Draft ordinance. I summarized the information for how long the average charging time is versus how long the average parking time is. Basically, an hour and 25 minutes beyond when a vehicle is fully charged, a vehicle is parked.
Page 9, by the way, sorry to interrupt that.
Is parked and blocking it about 10% of any given day. The charging stations are blocked. That actually went up to more than 11% in the past year. There were a couple months I did not have data on, which I noted. But basically how the charge point system works is I can go on as the administrator of the charging station, one of the administrators of the charging station, and establish any sort of fee structure that their system allows. Could be based on charging, it could be past a certain time limit, it could be an overstay fee for beginning to charge after a vehicle has stopped charging or is fully charged.
You can charge per kilowatt hour or just per?
Yes, yeah, per kilowatt hour, per hour, per minute, or even a flat fee. I know the discussion had been to keep the actual charging free for the time being, but establish a fee to incentivize people to move their vehicle once they're done charging. And how this would work is they would be, because they need the ChargePoint app on their phone to connect to the charger, they would be sent a notification through that. There's no, like, we're not trying to hide the fee or anything from anybody. They would know when they would begin to incur the fee. There is built in a grace period between when it's fully charged and when the fee kicks, if that's the route you all choose to go. Let me share my screen really quick.
Well, Seth, then, does that mean someone comes up to the charging station and they in on the, you know, it, against the eventuality that they might overstay their welcome? Do we know how that works?
Yeah, so the ChargePoint app has your, in order to register, you have to have a card.
Oh, okay.
Because ChargePoint
might go somewhere else,
yeah,
where you have to pay.
Exactly. Okay. ChargePoint in a lot of places is a, yeah, so that's what it would do, is your app would essentially.
Is it kind of like the parking meter app, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. like, paying your parking's up, put more in the meter.
That right. It's like Park Mobile or those.
Who would get that fee?
The village would.
So I back up just for a sec on this. Just a real quick reminder, because we're actually already short on time in this meeting, is the problem we're solving for is people parking there for like 5 hours. We only have two, like our entire village. So like we might, this is something we might back off of when some of these around, but like right now it feels like we really need to manage these. Part of these is, you know, those of us that do drive EVs, like I rarely get up. I really rarely is there a space open over. So that's what we're trying to solve for.
Correct. So what the actual text of the ordinance would likely be one line in this section I have up in the village parking lot section of the village code, simply specifying that the electric vehicle charging stations, we can specify these ones at Village Hall, or we could just say in village owned lots, just for any update any future installations, shall be use of actively charging electric vehicles, and then note that an overstay fee will take effect after 3 hours, 30 minutes after completion of charge, and then we would need to establish the exact amount we would charge, whether it's flat fee of $20, $3 an hour, $5 an hour. An hour.
Well, and you provided some good context. 11 or 12 or 13 or something.
Yeah, this was information put together by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. It shows what different communities charge at their publicly owned level 2 charging stations, just like actually listed on there as. So it shows some free for the first few hours, and then it takes effect. Some do charge by the kilowatt. So I just wanted to provide some context, and if you all had any thoughts in terms of what we should be charging for this overstay fee, were we to recommend the board to adopt such an ordinance.
What do we charge? Don't drive that much. Well, I'm not sure what, and I don't park that much in River Forest. What does parking cost if you go to a parking meter?
I don't know if there are any.
Well, they're like $1 an hour, but I'll tell you, if you illegally park on a street out here at night, it's pretty expensive.
Oh, I know. My husband's gotten tickets twice
when he left
it out.
Again, I may be off, but it needs to be looked at differently than parking. Don't or park in a parking meter. You're costing penalty whatever revenue.
Oh, I know. All I was meaning, Gary, was that you wouldn't want it to be any less than that.
I think it needs to be
at least that, and probably more.
I would think it needs to be painful because this case is actually blocking somebody else from a service. It'd be the equivalent of going to a traditional gas station and finding you can't get in because everybody's parked and gone to the movie. So I would think it should be a minimum of like $20 or something like that.
The ChargePoint app does warn you. So like whatever we set our like a half hour after you're fully charged, or if we say free for 2 hours and then it starts charging, like just like the parking apps, like Jamie was mentioning, like it does yell at you, right? Like you're
somebody can be waiting for that charger. Wouldn't give a lot of grace, maybe 30 minutes or something, but then that $20 an hour. Whatever.
Yeah, and I think 30 minutes was the when I was going through the ChargePoint system standard grace period time of auto-populated if you turned that on.
Can I ask a quick question? How long does it take to charge Burstow, is this one of the slow chargers, the fast chargers?
That's the problem.
This is the medium charger.
The level two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's charging
anywhere.
So it's
not going to be a 20-minute charge.
No.
You're
and so that's why, like, my reference point is anytime I go to a Northwestern lacrosse game, they have free for 2 hours. Great. And then it's like, it's not a huge amount of money, but it's enough to be annoying. I forget what it is. But they if you waited, like if Jeff pulled up with an empty battery and our policy was that, like, 30 minutes after you're fully charged, he'll be there for all day. So it almost feels like it needs to be up with an empty battery and charge for 8 hours. It's an hour. It's a time period.
Yeah, and that's what it appears. Most of the ones who do have fees, it's after 2 or 3 hours. You'll note the chart on here. The charge time is the time actively charging. I mean, there was 1 month. I think it was close to 4 hours for a charge time. December of last year, of December of 22. Most of them, it's lower in the 2 to 3 hour range for takes to actively charge.
Well, for our medium charger, let me ask this. How much charge do you get for, let's say, 3 hours?
Level two is what, 17 to 21 or something? Is it?
I mean, if you came with a dead battery and charged for 3 hours.
That's a better way to look at it. It's about 6.
Yeah, so you, like, the charger is about 6 kilowatts, and then the battery is. So from zero to full will take.
I'm plugged in right now. I got here about 6:40, 6:50, and I've put in 9. I'm done charging because I'm not doing.
So maybe the better question is, if you came in with a dead battery and charged for 2 or 3 hours, whatever it might be, a reasonable number.
Oh, that's totally reasonable.
How many
get you
miles
home.
Would it get you?
Yeah, that's going to give you 40 miles. I mean, it's plenty to.
Okay.
Charger.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. I really do think too. Like personally, like, I think 2 hours is generous. It's free. The citizens of River Forest are paying, you know, for, you know, for a decent charge of it on a supercharger. Question is, kind of getting back to full circle to what Gary was saying, where do we want to land? What do we want to recommend?
Maybe 2 hours with a 30-minute grace period, and then what's the price?
And then in the you went and nail them.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I don't. Is it our wish or the wish of the board to keep free? Because I don't think it's bad to have, like, a sort of minimum. I think somebody who, it will self-select sort of people that are free versus.
We want to cover the cost.
Question.
Yeah.
I think the philosophy was that it's a residence, and it also poor, and I don't know. There's been all kinds of. Of course, I'm not.
He had, like, a nice, you know, town area where, you know, it would be more of a marketing piece. It would make sense.
I thought you all are the ones who are voting on this, and it's only all of your decision, is that I believe the problem we are trying to solve for is the overstay beyond completion of charging. The average charge time, from what I can pull, was almost exactly 3 hours. 2 hours and 58 minutes or something like that. So
in the spirit of not having scope creep on this question, we want to talk about whether they should be free or not. We can, but let's for agenda item another time. I think what you're alluding to, Seth, is that 3 hours seems to be kind of.
That seems to be where it averages out, where people charge up until, and then our people seem to be getting 3 hours of, on average, active usage from these charging stations.
See what Western Springs does on here, Gary? Free for 3 hours and $20 an hour.
That was the one that I had found as an example, because Western Springs is another non-home rule community, and so I was trying to find examples of overstay fees in non-home rule communities to see if we could do it on our own, if we needed an ordinance, and so that was the first one I found that sort of sent me down this trail.
None of this is permanent either, guys, so like I think we can put something in place. And every month we get the report in here, pretty much.
Yep. Yeah, and we can continue to monitor the usage, the charge time, the session time.
So 3 months from now or 6 months from now, we can put in the agenda just a standing, like, let's review this. If we feel like it's still being abused, we can make it a little more painful.
And I will be saying I will have probably several items for you all to vote on directly relating to electric vehicle charging over the next 9 or 10 months as part of the electric vehicle readiness cohort. So some of it, you know, we can revisit this at any point during one of those.
I ask one quick question. I'm sorry. Just the timing of the day. If somebody parks there at, like, night, are they going to get $20 an hour, for example, after the 2 hours? For if they, do they have to set an alarm and get up and move their car? People park there overnight? Maybe that's the question.
Is suspicion that one individual who lives nearby is a frequent overstay.
Not the spirit of this, right? This I would hope that person would be, advised not to do that.
Eric, what was your proposal? Because I kind of got lost.
So I was working on 2 hours. Seth brought up a good point that 3 hours seems to be kind of – right now I'm looking at that page 11 of the packet that has kind of what other people are doing. It seems like most people are doing, like, per kilowatt hour they're doing is 15 cents. It sounds like we want to do – per kilowatt hour. So my suggestion would be something more in the range of what the other local communities are doing. Be free for 2 hours, and then, I don't know, after that. Princeton does have a weird combo of things. I don't think we need to make this complicated.
Yeah, I actually kind of like the Evanston and looks where you kind of that dollar amount per hour after that, and it can escalate as you go. And then if you're visiting family here or something and they didn't have a charger and you needed a charge, you'd be like, fine, I'm going to pay the
– it would actually incentivize you to stay there.
Yeah, like you'll stay and pay the $30. But if you're a serial user, you're not going to go in dollars every night to your car.
So I have a question. So Jamie, as a charger –
I think another piece we could incorporate is, some of these say no overnight parking. So there could be, it could be a similar to if you leave your car in the street for overnight parking, because we want to discourage that. So just say right up front, no overnight parking.
Can we have the police ticket after a certain hour? If you're going to say no overnight parking, does that go in effect? Is it 2 a.m.? I don't
know. It could just be the same as whatever the village is, if you're like on the street.
Yeah.
And that would be in addition to the charge point, if it said explicitly.
If I'm parked in front of River Forest Chocolate, 3 a.m., I would get a ticket, right?
Oh, yeah. My husband's gotten two on Lake where he forgot to put the truck away.
I'm a little concerned about, like, your contribution to the parking fund.
Yeah, my husband's real good at that.
I would need to look. I don't want to just searching all the way through these ordinances to find exactly what the fine structure is.
That would be ideal, is that it just falls into the, like.
Yeah, whatever the overnight parking is.
So let me make a suggestion, just because we're I'm here, is that it's free for 2 hours, and then I'm just, again, I'm looking on this 11. You know, I'm seeing mostly like $1 an hour. I think maybe we go like $2 an hour after that. I know that's not a huge disincentive, but I can tell you, as somebody that charges, it's really annoying when you start.
$1. I don't care.
Well, you
fine.
Could do.
You and Gary.
And you could also do it. You could have $2 if you're overstaying your charging, but you could have it. We could have a separate line, but you're not getting charge point. I mean, charge point can.
I would need to.
Hitting time, it's like Uber, right? It's like.
Here at the daycare, if you're at a certain time, one of the daycare facilities would charge me $1 a minute every time you're late.
You know, there's like a really interesting study on that very famous.
For the fee, like, do like a progressive.
Totally jack it up.
Yeah.
I'd be totally down with that, guys.
Yeah, let me look to see if that's. I don't know if that
system
is
support
possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't have to be like a huge amount.
So why don't we push?
But you're right, just increasing it.
Well, like it's like $2 for that third hour, and then it's like $20. Totally jacks up.
Yeah, somewhere it's like.
I can be on board with the Jamie and Gary. Let's see if we can.
Let me look into that. If that's possible, I will confirm if it can mechanically be done. If the system allows for that, then I will push forward with that, work with our lawyer to get an ordinance drafted for the board meeting either later this month, at the end of this month, or at the beginning of February. Some whereas clauses for the ordinance. I was mostly just going to use the information I put in this memorandum and then his vote recommendation. So do we have at least a general consensus that we would, let me recommend to the village staff to draft an ordinance and the village board to approve an ordinance establishing a fee for the electric vehicle charging stations, village hall, establish an ordinance clarifying that electric vehicle charging stations at village hall shall only be used for actively charging electric vehicles, and that vehicles shall be able to charge free for the first 2 hours, $1 for the third hour, and then $20 for every hour beyond the third hour.
Yeah, no, I think it was a good start.
That is correct, yeah. A motion to recommend, ultimately.
Are we going to have to vote on this motion, don't we?
Correct.
Yeah.
Do we have a motion to recommend village staff to draft an ordinance and the village of Board of Trustees to approve an ordinance that the village electric vehicle charging stations are only for active use of electric vehicle charging and to establish a fee for $2 for the third hour of charging and $20 for every hour beyond that in which a vehicle is in the spot, basically.
I'm not totally opposed to that. I do feel like if we figure out a structure by which somebody's kicked, I don't know that we have to go to $20 as in, like, if somebody's, you know, like, are we better off if that person, instead of giving us $1 an hour, just leaves and there's no. But, I mean, wouldn't it be better off if we got a charge and we got $2 if no one was waiting?
Is the bone of contention the $20? Well, let me ask this. Are we all thinking that the 2 hours and progressing the dollar amount we want to do, and the question is, when we get to that big bump, what it ought to be?
I think $20 is, like, everyone's going to view that as, like, a pretty firm off, which maybe that's fine.
Would it make sense to start maybe at a little lesser and then look at statistics for, I don't know, a couple of months and see if it changes behavior and maybe you don't need to go further? Or do we want money? You know?
We're not looking to make people to be efficient.
And that's the thing, is we can establish this as a lot of these communities do have just pretty flat $2 an hour after the first 2 hours. Bowling Meadows, it looks like $1 an hour after the first free hour.
I do kind of like the idea of having the rates go up. I'm just not sure after the first bump what it ought to be.
What about $5 for the third hour and then $10 for every hour after that?
Okay with that too, guys. It adds up quickly.
Cap it.
Yeah, and you can set a maximum.
So there's an idea right now, which is language that Seth said. 2 hours for free. $5 for the third hour. AJ, which is like, let's go dip. That changes behavior and then kind of go.
Well, how about, what did we say, $2 on as the first charge and then maybe $5 or after that and just leave it at $5?
Yeah, again, with the tiered one, I just need to confirm that.
That we can tier it all.
That I can tier it. Okay.
Assuming we can tier.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, and when you look at what other communities are doing, one is kind of by far the most popular, and there's some that are two, and then there's the we don't know what their objective is. It's to try to cover their costs of electricity, whether it's to get people out of those spots so other people can use them. Like, we don't have that. I mean, we're splitting hairs here a little bit, but, like, I'm okay with AJ's suggestion of let's try something. His behavior, and if it doesn't, we can.
Yeah, we can always come back and revisit this.
I assume the ordinance isn't going to talk about dollar amounts. It's just.
We would need to specify the amount of the fee.
And the ordinance has to change if we change?
Correct, yeah. In order to legally charge a fee for those, we need that
amount. That makes it a little harder to do a pilot program.
Okay, so how about 2 hours free and then $5 an hour up to 4 hours? I'm just trying to get this.
It sounds good.
2 hours free, $5 an hour, maximum of...
You guys go home and think about this, and we have a change of heart on this. We can, like, so next month we're basically going to have a.
Yeah, and I can, if you would all prefer, I can bring that back to this commission before we make a final recommendation to the board. I believe, given where we're at, that is probably the preferred route, and then we can bring this to the board at the end of February.
So if anybody has any epiphanies between now and the next meeting, we can, you want to repeat what we got, and then we can.
Yeah, right now I think it's just a motion to recommend village staff to draft an ordinance establishing a fee for the electric vehicle charging station for $5 an hour for every hour beyond the first 2 hours. To a maximum of $20 an hour, yeah.
We'll make the motion.
Chairperson Simon?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Commissioner Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Mazzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Vizi?
Yes.
All right, guys, it took longer than expected, but this will be usable stuff for when we do get more charges. Not throw away. It is 8:37, so I guess what I'd ask is there anything else on the agenda that is that we need to.
So just one thing very quickly, just for communications. So we've got a lights recycling reminder going up this Friday. That program ends next Monday. That's back behind Village Hall. Last week it suggested climate action plan summary, and I've got a call with UIC on Thursday. One thing for you all to flag is it sounds like some of the professors and students will be coming out on the morning of Saturday the 27th, and I will get more details on that later this week, basically to go around the community. We are offering them up this space mid to late that morning. I will get an exact time, and they would be interested in any community partners. You all are invited to come out to that, answer any questions the graduate students may have. So I'll send all that information out as I get more. Free composting I was going to put out as a weekly at the end of the month. Luis has already submitted a couple ideas for future weekly and monthly ones, so I figured this one on the energy efficiency and the savings of dishwashers and why you pre-rinsing is a waste of energy, essentially, would be a good one for the February monthly. And then digital subscriptions to reduce paper usage for one of the weeklies in early February.
And the dishwasher pre-rinsing I got from an article. I don't know if any of you read Wire Cutters. It was the New York Times. It's kind of reports, but they also do articles, and there was an article on dishwashers and pre-rinse. I have a dishwasher drawer instead of a full dishwasher, so that's where there's the dishwasher. Get a smaller one or a pair of drawers, one, or use both as you.
And then the other weekly in February last year, Ellie had written up one for a green Valentine's gift guide of way to be more sustainable in your Valentine's gifts. I figured just to reuse that one.
That was great, that one.
The week before Valentine's Day.
I actually have a great Christmas one, and I'm really sorry that I only learned it.
Well, you're only like after Christmas. 350 days away from Christmas.
But I wrote it down, and I'm going to bring it up.
Right. You know, you can always, because we keep that huge document, you can always just get it to Seth, and we'll put it in there. So
yeah, and I've got a running Word document.
I've got a whole collection of things on.
Send them all along. I will plug them in throughout the year going forward. So, yeah, happy to take those. Yeah, that should get us through the next meeting. It is scheduled for February 13th.
Real quickly, I don't have to discuss that tonight, but I'd like to revisit the idea of having a regular entries. If they aren't going to produce an article, we could do a regular one view.
We have that as an agenda item for the next meeting. We don't forget to.
I've got some ideas about put something together, some kind of.
Sorry about our timing, but, you know, we knew the LRS thing would take a good part of. Is there any other kind of immediate business? Okay. That next meeting is February 13th, right before Valentine's Day. So bring Seth something. You want to? Can we have a motion to adjourn?
Simon?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Mezzatesta?
Yes.
Commissioner Veazey?
Yes.
We are adjourned at 8:42.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, everybody. Sorry about the kind of power-packed meeting there, but a lot done.
Yeah, has Luke sent you guys?